This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to A Little Pot of Joy, the podcast program.
Welcome. This is A Little Pot of Joy, the podcast show with Andrea and Alice. Our community is made up of so many amazing and diverse groups of people, as are the programs on Joy 94.9. There is something there for everyone. A Little Pot of Joy is where we highlight just some of these amazing programs.
We would like to show our respect and acknowledge the traditional custodians of this land, of elders past and present of the Kulin Nation, whose land we are broadcasting from.
We're opening the evening with a podcast from QNN, Community News.
News and information for the lesbian, gay, bisexual, trans and intersex communities of Australia and the world. QNN is produced and podcast by Jacob Holman and broadcast nationally via the Community Radio Network.
So if you missed the community highlights, podcasts are available for download from the Joy website, www.joy.org.au/QNN.
This is A Little Pot of Joy, the podcast program.
Made in Melbourne, for Australia and the world, this is the Joy 94.9 GLBTIQ News Roundup, a weekly update of what's been happening in the gay, lesbian, bisexual, trans and intersex communities.
G'day and welcome to QNN. I'm Adam Samuel.
And I'm Alastair Kingston. There are calls for the new PM to reconsider his support for the Liberal Party's position on same-sex marriage. A Senate report has recommended marriage equality should be resolved by a vote in Parliament and that a plebiscite after the next election would be unnecessary and harmful. Australian Marriage Equality says the report makes it clear the quickest, cheapest, least divisive and most appropriate way to deal with same-sex marriage is a cross-party vote on the floor of Parliament. AME's Rodney Croom says the group's seeking a meeting with Mr Turnbull to put the case to him on marriage equality during this term of Parliament.
There's been a mixed response from Victorian health groups to provocative posters that appeared in Melbourne city centre over the past week, calling for the approval of HIV preventative treatment, or better known as PrEP. The posters, put up by yet unknown activist groups, say you can F raw, PrEP works. PrEP being pre-exposure prophylaxis, a treatment HIV negative people can take as part of prevention strategies. Victorian AIDS Council acting CEO Kent Burchess says while the VAC has some concerns over how the posters might stigmatise gay people and those living with HIV, the message is clear. The community wants and needs PrEP. Meantime, Living Positive Victoria says PrEP isn't about giving gay men a licence to F-raw, it's about putting them in control of their sexual health.
Meantime, new research from the Kirby Institute shows gay and bisexual men test for HIV more often when rapid testing is available. The study found men who had rapid HIV tests were 3.5 times more likely to have two or more tests over a 12-month period compared to men who use traditional testing services. Health authorities recommend sexually active gay men test for HIV at least once a year, even if they use condoms, and the men who have multiple partners or undertake risky activities test every 3 to 6 months. The AIDS Council of New South Wales says it's had a great response to its rapid testing services across the state, which have delivered more than 4,500 tests over the past 2 years.
Over to the US, and there are calls for New York's iconic Stonewall Hotel to be turned into the first US national park site dedicated to LGBT history. The Stonewall riots, which happened in 1969, are considered to be a pivotal moment in LGBT history after patrons fought back over constant police raids and harassment. A group of politicians and activists are leading the push for the watering hole to be permanently protected, joining around 300 other sites around the US that are dedicated to historic events. Those behind the push say America has a responsibility to preserve and respect the places important to the nation's history, and that it's time for a national monument honouring the legacy of the events that took place at Stonewall.
It turns out Elton John didn't get a phone call from the Russian president after all. Turns out it was a Russian prankster that called up Elton John pretending to be President Vladimir Putin. Vladimir Krasnov says he called up the pop star pretending to be Putin after the singer said he wanted to meet the Russian leader to discuss gay rights. Sir Elton responded via Instagram saying pranks are funny, homophobia, however, is never funny, but he's looking for the positive, saying he was happy to be pranked if it helped push this vital issue back into the spotlight.
Briefly now, Argentina has lifted a ban on gay and bisexual men donating blood.
Conservatives in the United States have protested Doritos making rainbow-coloured corn chips in support of the It Gets Better campaign.
Reality TV star Caitlyn Jenner has filed papers to legally change her name and gender. For the first time in Australia's political history, we finally have a Prime Minister and opposition leader who both support same-sex marriage. Malcolm Turnbull became the 29th Prime Minister after a party room vote saw Mr Turnbull take the title of party leader in a 54-44 swing against Tony Abbott. However, there's not likely to be a change in the Liberal Party's position on the issue anytime soon, with sources telling the Star Observer that Turnbull will stick with the party position of a plebiscite on same-sex marriage, even though it was an Abbott-driven initiative. Leichhardt MP Warren Entsch says he doesn't think Mr Turnbull will overturn the party room decision and that he'd offer to work with Mr Turnbull on the wording and timing of the vote.
Meantime, five New South Wales state MPs are set to front the Senate inquiry examining the option of a popular vote on same-sex marriage. The five MPs, including out-Sydney MP Alex Greenwich, have made a submission to the inquiry saying the federal parliament should decide on the issue and that a public vote is unnecessary and inappropriate. They've also suggested how the question should be worded if the government does push ahead with a plebiscite. Their suggestion, do you agree that Australia should allow marriage between two adult people, regardless of their sex?
Over in Queensland, and men who have sex with men will soon have better access to a treatment which is hoped will see a reduction in HIV transmission rates in the Sunshine State. The Queensland AIDS Council is establishing a new clinic to streamline access to PrEP, or pre-exposure prophylaxis, a medication taken by people who are HIV negative to reduce their risk of exposure. Currently, PrEP isn't available in Australia unless it's part of a clinical trial, but doctors at the AIDS Council clinic will write prescriptions for it, assisting the process of ordering it from overseas. The council says it hopes reducing barriers to accessing PrEP will lead to a reduction of new HIV notifications in Queensland.
A leading trans advocate will head an LGBT task force advising the Victorian government. Belinda Appleton will be part of the group looking at current and emerging issues for the community and will advise the government on how to put equality for LGBT Victorians back on the agenda. Equality Minister Martin Foley says the government wants to be guided by the LGBT community as it removes discrimination from Victorian society. The group also includes Anna Brown from the Victorian Gay and Lesbian Rights Lobby, Jamie Gardner from Equal Opportunity, Tim Christodoulou from Minus 18 and Ruth McNair from the University of Melbourne.
Briefly now, in the United States, that county clerk from Kentucky is back at work after 5 days in jail, but she says she still won't issue marriage licenses to same-sex couples, however she won't stop her deputies from doing so.
A London gay couple say they were kicked out of an Uber car by a driver who got offended after they shared a quick kiss in the back seat.
A high school student in the United States has been suspended after she refused to take off her Nobody Knows I'm a Lesbian t-shirt.
And which out TV presenter has had a close and slightly racy encounter with Madonna? Find out after QNN Sport with Tanya Lewis.
Australia's two LGBTI water polo clubs, the Sydney Stingers and Melbourne Surge, have joined forces to create a third club in Brisbane. The new Brisbane Tritons team shared a stand with the Aqualicious Swim team at the Brisbane Pride Festival last weekend in an attempt to attract new members for the squad. International Gay Rugby have signed an agreement with America's governing body of rugby to wipe out homophobia in the sport. Earlier this year, IGR joined forces with World Rugby and now they've signed a memorandum of understanding with USA Rugby to allow people in the sport to be free from discrimination and bullying. US baseball team the New York Mets have been shamed into cancelling their kiss cam after a fan complained when the club showed two men as a joke. Mets fan Eden Bednarz has been campaigning against the team's kiss cam all year on Twitter as the Mets would show two players from the opposing team on the big screen for laughs. The club has apologised for any offence caused and say they will no longer include the players in future kiss cams. The first ever sports scholarship for LGBTI athletes in Australia has been launched by the Pinnacle Foundation. The national charity provides funds and mentors to disadvantaged LGBTI youth and has created the Pippa Downs Scholarship to help full-time student athletes represent Australia. Applications for 2016 can be registered online at thepinnaclefoundation.org and close on the 1st of October. And finally, in the AFL, St Kilda has officially requested to play Sydney in a Pride match for the 2016 home and away season. The Saints have asked the AFL to schedule the special clash with the Swans at Etihad in a primetime Saturday night match in order to reach as many people as possible. The game would be the first of its kind for premiership points while celebrating and raising awareness for equality and diversity. The Swans are reportedly on board with being named in the match as they hosted a NAB Challenge Pride match earlier this year.
Thanks, Tanya. And Madonna has continued her provocative waves, spanking and humping out US TV presenter and journalist Anderson Cooper after pulling him on stage during her Rebel Heart tour show in New York. Cooper may be a little starstruck still, taking to social media saying, "I still can't believe that happened." And that's what's happening in your LGBT material world this week. I'm Adam Samuel.
And I'm Alistair Kingston.
Thanks to the team at QNN. That was the Joy 94.9 GLBTIQ News Roundup. To hear this update again, you can subscribe to the QNN podcast, available at joy.org.au/QNN. Or you can follow QNN on Twitter, at QNN Australia. At QNN Australia.
You're on Joy 94.9, and this is A Little Pot of Joy with your hosts, Andrea and Alice. Up next from Jackson Greta, Monday Drive, The Bachelor and Burlesque. That crazy duet are in full swing as they discuss the more important aspects of life.
Jackson Greta discussed their many feelings about the end of The Bachelor, Burlesque the movie, and what Greta will change when she becomes mayor.
You can listen to the entire podcast by downloading it from the Joy website, joy.org.au/Jackson Greta, or download it for free from the iTunes store.
You're listening to A Little Pot of Joy, the podcast program.
Jackson Greta on Joy.
I think it's every...
Is it everyone's favourite day of the week?
Monday.
Favourite moment of the week? when that music comes on and our beautiful voices come on air.
It's nice. I like it.
I really like it. Greta, what's happening today?
We've got a lot happening today. We're going to talk about the end of The Bachelor because we're such big fans of the show. So I think we need to sort of, you know, wrap up our thoughts.
Yeah, and we really don't care if you don't like the show. Like, this is what's going to happen.
We've also got a movie reviewer.
With a twinge of difference.
Well, yeah, it's a slightly different movie. And last but not least, I want to talk about the things I'm going to change in Melbourne when I become mayor.
I look forward to those days. I really do. We have to talk about The Bachelor because we have to get it out of our system to someone other than each other.
Yes. It's not old news. It's still news. Love is always news, Jackie.
Is it?
Yeah, I think so. Okay. At least according to our network television station.
Do you want to give a quick recap on what happened?
All right. So Bachelor took his final two favourites to meet his family.
His favourites.
His
favourite humans that he's met over the past 3 months.
His favourite potential girlfriend, wife, lovers.
Shnuzana. Baby holder.
Baby Carrie. I'm going to stop. Shnuzana and Lana.
Yes.
Yes, they rhyme.
Yes, they do.
He's a simple man. They meet the families. The families say things. It's all a bit boring, really. He got a bit teary at one point, and we won't go into that.
Mm.
And then he does solo dates with them.
Yeah. Which is just a lot of, like, rowing in water.
Yeah, they were.
Like paddle boats.
They were very water-based.
They were water-based.
They were water-based.
Why do people think that being on a boat is romantic anyway? I don't know.
Was about to say I don't like to get wet on a date, but then... No, I mean, I still went there, but, you know.
Yeah, well, exactly.
I protected myself.
Yeah.
Anyway, then there's the final ceremony, and we were really thrown by this because his date with Shnuzana was not really that touchy-feely, and it kind of felt like she was on her way out.
Correct. I agree. Yes.
His date with Lana was all hands-on. And then, well, what happened, Jackie?
Snares one.
Should we have a listen?
Oh, yeah, I do. Sorry, I do have audio prepared. I shouldn't just say it out loud.
Yeah. Well, we've come since I couldn't even remember.
He speaks so slowly.
I can't believe what an incredible woman you are.
Really?
Thanks.
Cheers, babe.
You are so strong.
Yep, true.
You are so warm.
Physical?
You have the biggest heart.
Boobs. Biggest boobs. Don't lie, Sam.
I just feel so, so lucky for this.
Meanwhile, Lana's crying in a...
Brought us together.
I was going to say, doesn't matter. She's crying in a car that was sponsoring the show.
It was very quick how we got rid of her.
Yeah, just straight back in the car.
But really quick. Like, I feel like if I've, you know, it was an efficient breakup.
You were shocked.
I was very shocked.
You were on your back at one point.
And I was wearing a very tight dress, so it was quite a difficult position to get into. No, it was, I just didn't see it coming.
No.
Also because Schnez has a 9-year-old daughter, which is a bit more weight to a relationship, particularly a new relationship.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, that's not to say she shouldn't have won.
Yeah.
But, you know, these shows are so predictable usually. You think that, you know, the 27-year-old woman without a child is going to... But no, and good on him.
Will they last?
Oh,
predictions?
I can't. I'm not sure I'm in a position.
Yeah.
I believe in
love. I reckon we'll get a nice New Year's Eve photo of the two of them watching some fireworks with some champagne.
Yep.
And then Bob's your uncle.
All over Red Rover.
All over Red Rover, I reckon.
Jackie doesn't believe in love.
Sorry to do that to you. And it is time for a brand new segment. We're going to be reviewing films.
But not just any film. Today we're reviewing a Golden Globe nominated film.
I really don't think you should say that as though it has any worth to it, okay?
Jackie, what's the film called?
Burlesque.
And it was released in 2010.
I giggle just saying it. It's just not
can
good.
Can I read its little description?
Please.
A small town girl ventures to Los Angeles and finds her place in a neo-burlesque club.
What does that mean?
No idea. Run by a former dancer.
Hello, Cher.
What's neo-burlesque? Oh, yeah, Christina Aguilera is in it.
Yes, yeah. Cher and Christina are in it. Bombshells of the music industry.
Little fact, because we love facts here on Jackson Greta. This is the first musical film that Cher did.
Which seems strange because she's a musician.
And has been since the 60s.
Why did we watch this?
I don't know.
It was a Friday afternoon.
It could have been raining. I actually reckon we'd been in the Joy studio earlier.
Yes, yes. And there we were, cuddled up on the couch with a hot water bottle and a glass of red wine.
Finally. Finally got you onto the couch with some wine. And we couldn't help but select this film and off we went.
How would you describe the film in just a few words?
An awful lot of promise. And not so many results.
I've got a little bit of some audio from the film.
Okay.
If you would like.
I would.
Which kind of, I think, sums up how stupid this film is. No offence to you, Greta.
Brilliant.
When you are putting on your makeup, it's like you're an artist. But instead of painting on a canvas, you're painting your face. Didn't you ever watch your mom put on her makeup?
My mom died when I was 7, and it's my first lesson.
It's not funny, but I feel like every bad movie, it's because they're like orphans.
I love how she's like, this is my first lesson. In makeup?
In makeup or in life?
We have a little song from the movie.
Yes, because of course there is a lot of songs in it, being that Christine and Cher are both singers.
And we've been teasing you. After this track, we're going to tell you about the fascinating subplot of burlesque, because it is truly technical and bizarre.
Like, it actually caused us to sit together at the end of the film and discuss what we'd just watched and try and understand this subplot.
There was a lot of time on Wikipedia, and we got schooled by burlesque.
Didn't we?
We learnt things.
All right, let's listen to one of the Cher tracks called Welcome to Burlesque. I think this might be the first one. Makes sense, doesn't it? You're listening to Joy.
Show a little more, show a little less, add a little smoke, welcome to burlesque.
You are listening to Jackson Greta here on Joy, and we are reviewing the film Burlesque because we can.
I just did such a good dance to that song. Just wanted everyone to know.
I felt like burlesque is the poor man's Moulin Rouge, if that really sums up the film for everyone. Like, they had a lot of... Except they could actually sing. Like, I don't think Nicole could sing. Anyway.
Ooh, Jackie just...
Well, I'm just saying.
Well, yeah, you're right. They are incredible singers and performers. The ingredients were there.
Mm.
The recipe just didn't quite
work.
Bake in the oven.
So we were talking about this strange subplot that's in the film Burlesque.
And it is strange.
Well, that's why I said it was a strange subplot.
Look, what you may basically have, and I won't go into too much detail, but the actual building where the burlesque shows happen is quite low. Let's say it's four stories high.
Yeah, great.
Right. Across the road, someone, this is in the movie, everyone, because I'm aware that this is getting abstract. Across the road in the movie, someone's built an apartment block.
Yes.
And he's selling those apartments with the premise that there'll be a view. Now, Christina goes on a date with some random.
Yeah.
And he explains air rights.
Air rights.
Air, as in we all breathe air.
Air.
Rights, as in my right to vote.
Yes.
Air rights.
So I've got the audio from this particular part of the film.
Okay. I'd like to...
That view cost me three times what the house did. You see that strip mall down there?
You own that too.
No. I own everything above it.
So you own air.
Air rights.
Aren't you clever?
Mall guy gets to keep his property. I get to keep the second best view in LA.
What's the first?
It's at this point he looks at her as though she is the first best
how many
view
girls have you
in
used
Los
that
Angeles.
One?
I just like to. Called me on it.
I like that. You like that? So, yes, he owns the air above a venue so that he has a nice view out of his wanky Los Angeles apartment.
So we were both a bit confused when this part of the film started to unroll because we wanted to know, is this real?
And you know how in a lot of these films you hear something that you feel like you probably should have paid more attention to, but then you go, wait a minute, this is a film with Cher and Christina Aguilera. There can't be anything I need to pay attention to.
Yeah, how intelligent do I need to be?
Yeah, you think not very.
Turns out quite.
Somewhat, yes. Yeah.
We won't give away the ending of the film, but the ending of the film is very much about air rights. Now, so today I thought, oh, you know, we're going to be talking about air rights. Better pull open the Wikipedia page. And my favourite thing about Wikipedia is you scroll to the bottom and it says, see also.
Which is like, if you want to read a bit more about this subject, but in a different manner.
Yeah, you want to learn about some similar topics. Yeah. So say you're looking up lions, it might say see also tigers
yes
or big cats.
Yep.
If you go to see also in the air rights section of Wikipedia, it says see also burlesque. I am not kidding. Burlesque is a valid reference for air rights.
So there has been no other pop culture reference in the history of the world regarding air rights except for burlesque.
Oh, what a great film. It didn't win that Golden Globe.
Strangely enough. Until next week, we'll watch something else this week. It's not going to be your latest blockbuster or your latest indie film. Well, it could be. Don't look at me like that,
Tyler. I don't know. I was just thinking, are we going to be able to find a film with such a ridiculous and educational subplot?
Yes, I've seen your wish list of films, Tyler. We definitely will. You are listening to Joy. Jackson Grutter here, and a very special guest because it is 5:30, and that means
Matt.
That means Matt. And his mic on. There you go.
News headlines,
hello.
Please.
Not as exciting as last week, let's just put it that way. And in sports, and Sam Kavanagh, who's a horse trainer, has been disqualified for putting a bit of party drugs into his horses and trying to make them run a little bit faster.
Party so, drugs?
Yeah, cobalt, bit of race day drenching, speed,
oh my goodness,
ice,
all
MDMA
of them.
Absolutely.
All of them.
That's disgusting.
Just raid a local music festival and chuck the horses in.
That's when people got suspicious.
Yeah.
A whole heap of horses turned up at Stereo Sonic.
It was when the horse was wearing fluffy leg warmers from just the knees down that people really thought blood test time.
Something's happening here. Oh.
That's it.
You're on Joy 94.9 and this is A Little Pot of Joy with Andrea and Alice. Up next from Critical Hit, Horror Take 2.
Luke is joined by Meigs, Archer and Viv to talk about all things scary and horrible. They discuss how horror has changed and evolved as a genre over the years, and the successes, as well as the indie game development scene getting heavily involved.
They also have a chat about how virtual reality is going to completely change the way horror games are played out. If you can't listen to the show live, download the podcast from the Joy website, joy.org.au or the iTunes Store.
This is A Little Pot of Joy, the podcast program. Yes, you are on Critical Hit here today, and we're here to talk to you about something that the music does not really imply at all. The music's very happy and chirpy, but today we're here to talk about dark, scary, and horrible things. We're here to talk about horror, which I'm very excited about. So,
yep.
It's pretty scary stuff. Now, Archer, now, yourself, would you say horror games, like them, don't like them, scared, not scared?
I cannot stand playing horror games, but it's solely for the reason that I am absolutely just terrified of everything. I actually absolutely love horror games, and especially psychological horror ones, for their artistry and how well they're crafted and just how good they are at getting into your mind and scaring everyone. It's brilliant.
Yes.
But can't actually play it myself.
Fair enough. So, but you like? Do you like to watch others play it though? As
certainly
well?
Certainly do. I wouldn't watch Let's Plays. Like, I still don't understand that at all. But I'll sit in the room and watch someone else and be there with them.
But it's funny you mention Let's Plays, because I think that things like Let's Plays, you know, people playing horror games on YouTube and others watching them, has really given extra exposure to the horror game genre. Because we're actually not just watching the game, we're watching the reactions of people playing it, and everyone loves watching someone get scared.
Love it.
Like, it's the best. I mean, when you're with friends in a cinema and you got a friend next to you and they scream or they jump and you feel the seat move when a jump scare happens, you look at them and you laugh and you're like, ah, that got you.
Yeah, but it's not so funny at the end of the movie where you've got claw marks down your arm because they've just, like, grabbed onto you. And, like, that's not fun. But, yeah, seeing them scared is always
funny. I thought you were going to have, like, a wet patch on the floor.
That's where I thought you were.
Is that serious?
No. Well, no.
Depends on the movie.
And then you went claw marks and then I thought it was going in a completely different direction again.
You know, horror games, some people love them, like me and Viv, and some people don't like them so much. So now, Viv, as a horror girl, I'm sure, confident that you've had nights with your friends where you've sat around and played a scary game together as a group.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Of course, I have one scheduled tonight.
I remember I had a Halloween party at my house, and I set up FNAF when it first came out and played that, and that was interesting. It was about 10 people all crowded around.
And FNAF is...
Do the thing. Five Nights at Freddy's.
Yes, for those playing at home who might not know what FNAF is.
FNAF.
Took me a second to get it work.
FNAF.
Which now has, there's four of them now, is that right?
Yeah, four. Yeah.
So yeah, I'm gathering around and playing that together, and a perfect example, because that's a very short burst type of game. Not a long commitment. So perfect for a party atmosphere to kind of get some scares and be done in potentially, well, if you're terrible, you can die in like 5 minutes, right?
Oh, well, 5 seconds, more like it, yeah.
Which is lovely. So, you know, you've had a few nights like that. So, I mean, how is that? Are you all horror fans and you all react, you know, when things happen?
Relatively,
what's it like?
Yeah. I mean, myself, like, I absolutely love playing them, but I get scared very easily and we'll often end up after about 10 minutes just shaking. We're like, oh my God, this is so good, but I'm so scared.
Yeah.
And everyone will be like laughing and ha ha ha, it's so great. And
yeah.
They won't want to play. I'm the one who plays.
Yeah, I'd be hiding on the couch with a blanket, just be like, oh my,
yeah.
Nope.
It's pretty stressful, yeah. I think the most common thing I say when I'm playing video games in my household to my partner is, why am I playing this?
Yes.
That's a constant question I have to ask, because I scare really easily too when things freak me out, and I read into it, I overanalyze, and I build it up even more in my head to make it worse.
Yeah.
To the point where I'm literally sitting there playing a game like Five Nights at Freddy's, hiding with my laptop in front of me going, what am I doing? Why am I doing this? Can you turn the laptop off so I don't play this anymore? But I keep going anyway. Now, one thing that I've noticed, guys, when it comes to horror is minimalist horror. So games that you don't have your guns and your weapons and things like that. It's actually more of a gameplay style of running and hiding. And that's all you do to defend yourself. If the enemy comes at you...
Psychological horror. Yeah. Have you watched the trailer for Allison Road?
Yes. Now, Viv, you mentioned this to me as well, Allison Road.
Yeah.
talk me through Allison Road for a sec.
Oh, gosh. Well, it's on along the lines of PT.
Yes.
I don't really know how to quite describe it other than that. Just have, like, PT in your mind, and it's pretty much there, except it's... I don't know, a little bit more scary to me, at least.
I would say psychological horror comes into play with Allison Road and PT, definitely.
Definitely. So I was the one who, I saw it a couple of weeks back, and I showed Viv, because I was like, this is so up Viv's alley, she'd love it.
Yeah.
I am yet to keep my eyes open through the entire thing, and this is just like someone else playing
it. Yeah, it's a gameplay trailer.
Still could not deal with it. It's full on, It's at the start, it's a lot of stuff that just shouldn't be scary. It's just innocuous, but you know something's going to happen, and then it does, and then you freak out.
Yeah, it's like a 20-minute demo, but realistically, you're only under threat for, like, the last couple minutes.
It's a 20-minute demo. It seems like an hour, and you just want
to... It feels long.
It does.
And it's been compared to PT, because PT was the playable teaser for Silent Hills that was released on the PlayStation Store about a year ago, year and a half ago, and was since pulled off the store, unfortunately. Mm. Again, Konami, yep, cool. But... Allison Road uses the same engine as PT. Now, PT looked good. It looked amazing.
It did,
the Unreal Engine 4, in its full glory, it's like walking around an actual house. It looked great, and Allison Road is just like that.
Particularly Allison Road. Not even just using the engine that PT used. It used every horror trope and attribute that PT used in order to scare the player.
Yeah. Mm.
It skipped a few of them because it wasn't as long. It was just a trailer. You didn't get to see a whole lot, whereas PT was pretty much its whole in-house game.
Yeah.
But it pulled it off surprisingly well for something that was just taking.
So what do you think, guys? Because, I mean, PT and Allison Road, they're set in a house, right? You know, these horror games we're talking about previously, you know, they're going through, like, Silent Hill, you're in, like, mental asylums and hospitals and schools with kids, you know.
Always
it's all
scary.
This weird cliche stuff, but it is scary, right? You've got playgrounds with swings moving. It's all horrible and great. But it's very horror-y. It's very cliched. But these games... they're in your house, and that's what makes them so messed up, because they look like it could be your house.
Yeah, it's relatable, definitely. I mean, how many times have you watched a horror movie and have been scared of going to sleep in your own home? Like, you've been scared of even just sitting there in your own house.
And I want to bring up as well, virtual reality coming in next year in a big way. You know, you've got Oculus Rift coming out. You've got Sony's, Project Morpheus. Mm. You know, and the idea of being in virtual reality in a horror environment, no thanks.
Yeah, what I think would be even worse is HoloLens, because it'll augment your own house.
Oh, yeah, I've seen, there's
done
like
that with phones and stuff.
Yeah. So it kind of does it, but not very well. But, yeah.
Over your face, yeah.
Nope.
But I imagine, like, I know at PAX last year, they actually had Oculus Rift there, and they had, they randomly were assigning us games, and they assigned Kev with Alien Isolation in Oculus Rift, and I got, like, this cutesy platformer with, like, a little bunny jumping around, and Kev got Alien, and he was like, I hate you. couldn't have planned it better.
This game looks incredible. I hate you, but it looks incredible.
Yeah, but, you know, that's a very different thing, especially with a first-person horror game, which a lot of these games kind of are, like PT and Allison Road and Outlast and games like that, even Slender as well, which has been quite popular, Amnesia. You're in the first person, so then having that virtual reality headset, so you cannot see, you can't look next to you and see your dog sitting there looking confused. You can't look to the left and see your amiibo collection. You can't see these things around your house that you normally look at for kind of safety, like, oh, that was really scary, but that's my kitchen,
but you
and
can
it's all
feel
good.
The stream of piss running down your leg.
You always feel that, and you always hope that it's yours.
Yeah.
But you know, the virtual reality wearing that headset thing, that sounds awful to me.
I think that a lot of those, like, minimalist games, Slender, and especially those SCP games, that stairwell game, that God awful stairwell game. Okay, the stairwell game is essentially all it is. It's using that anxiety, and you just go down the stairs.
I think there's a stairwell involved. In this
Hush, I have no idea what
it's
else.
Just a stairwell.
Maybe it's a game.
An SCP. Yeah, it's an SCP, and you're just like walking down the stairwell, and that's all it is. And it's infinite until the monster comes out, and like you don't know what it is. And you can see it in the corner, and then you can be like, oh, I can't look at it. If I look at it, it'll attack me. So you have to, like, not look at it and jump down to the next flight of stairs.
Ooh, no.
Yeah, so can you imagine that with an Oculus Rift?
Ooh, no. Ooh, yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
Ooh, bad.
That sounds
so bad.
Terrifying. Amazing.
This game is terrifying. It scares me so much. And the first time I played it, we were in a whole group of... there was a group of people, and we're in a room, and I was cowering behind somebody the whole time while somebody else played it. And, yeah, no, the stress is too much. It's
that
great.
Is like, that's all the psychological elements of PT, but even more simplified, and it's still terrifying. That's brilliant.
Yeah, there's a jump mechanic and a walk mechanic, and that's it.
Jump mechanic, walk mechanic. Okay, so you have claustrophobia, you have repetitiveness, you have the inability to escape, and then
you can't attack.
Inevitable... fear.
Something will come out and get you.
Yeah.
Now, being a lover of being scared, would you play that kind of thing?
Yes, of course.
Oh my gosh.
You're listening to Joy 94.9, and this is A Little Pot of Joy with Alice and Andrea. Up next from CNC Drive Factory, Doctor Who.
Chris and Cam got the chance to speak with Alexandra Tynan, one of the original costume designers for the Cybermen for the final William Hartnell Doctor Who storyline in 1967.
You can tell they were stoked, and yes, they were at their geekiest.
You can listen to the entire podcast by downloading it from the Joy website, joy.org.au/CNC Drive Factory, or download it for free from the iTunes Store.
You're listening to A Little Pot of Joy, the podcast program.
CNC Drive Factory with Chris and Cam. On the line with us now is a woman who has an amazing array of skills. She is a fashion and textile designer. She worked for the Royal Shakespeare Company. She later worked for the BBC. She now is resident in Australia, has been for a long time. She's been a huge part of the ABC, done so many more things. But today, on the 50th anniversary week of Doctor Who, the only thing that is important to us about Alexandra Tynan is she is the creator of the original Cybermen. Welcome to Joy, Alexandra.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
You are now a resident of Australia. I got that right, yeah?
Yes, I am.
You've been here for some time.
Quite a long time, on and off, yes.
Now, you are a costume designer, but what? Tell us some of the things that you've done over your years in your career.
Oh golly gosh! Well, I didn't train as a costume designer. I trained as a fashion designer. But when I moved from Belfast to London, I kind of needed a job and ended up making costumes. So one thing led to another, and about 2 years later, I was working at the BBC as a designer. So that was very exciting, and the BBC was a terrific place back in those days. And then I left there in 1968, came to Australia, and things were a bit different here. I wasn't able to get the same kind of job, but I did all kinds of funny things, and then ended up doing some work for the ABC, and I've worked in education, I've worked in the corporate sector, and I've worked in a whole lot of things, and I've been behind a counter selling stuff.
Fantastic.
And I've done everything just to put bread on the table, really.
fantastic. Now, we want to go right back to, I think when the original Cybermen appeared, I think, was it 1967?
Yes, it was.
Right, so which is essentially 4 years after Doctor Who started with William Hartnell as mm-hmm. the original Doctor Who.
Mm-hmm.
Did you get to meet William Hartnell?
Yes, I did, because I worked on his last three episodes, and I was there then for the changeover to Patrick Troughton. So that was a fascinating experience, especially in retrospect, when I look back and think, golly, there weren't many of us in the studio that day. It was kept very quiet and low key because Bill was leaving and he was sad about that, and everybody felt a bit down. And Patrick was wonderful. He just sort of was gentle and sweet with Bill and very understanding, and the whole thing went off very smoothly and very simply. But it was terrific just to be there for that experience.
Fantastic. And, of course, the original Cybermen appeared in William Hartnell's last episodes, wasn't it?
The 10th Planet.
Yes, they were just starting to come in. And I was a designer, but I wasn't the creator of them, because Dr. Kit Pedler who was a medical man. He was the creator, and he had the idea. And sadly, he didn't live for many more years after that. So he missed out on all the sort of rah-rah Cybermen.
So before we get right into the look of the Cybermen, particularly at that time, is could you have had any idea about the fact that you would be talking about this 45 years later?
Oh, no way. No way. I mean, when I'd finished the show and I thought, thank goodness, that's the end of them. I don't have to see those wretched Cybermen anymore. and famous last words, because you never say never. You know, that's the word that makes everything happen the way you don't want it to happen. So it was... I mean, looking back on it, you think, my goodness, I mean, if we'd only known, and I think in a way it was good we didn't know, you know,
yeah,
it was going to keep going.
Mm. I mean, you were essentially creating a children's show and trying to frighten, you know, 9-year-old children.
Yes, it worked too.
It did, apparently. Now, tell us about the original Cybermen design. It's a little different to the Cybermen we see in the current series. Quite a lot different, actually. But they are such an they're considered to be second only to the Daleks in terms of their menace and their and but the reality is, in some ways, they're actually scarier because they're more human in a way.
And yes, they're human without human sensitivity, and they don't have souls, you see. They've jettisoned those on the way through.
So tell us about the thought process and what went into creating the look for the Cybermen.
Well, I think, the word cybernetics hadn't really come into the, you know, the general vocabulary in those days, but Kit Pedler was very interested in the fact that human body parts could be replaced with artificial ones, and that this was going to be a science which would develop in a big way, and of course he was absolutely right. So the idea that the Cybermen had originally been human and had caught on to this thing of being able to, if they, you know, got a broken arm, well, you put an artificial one in, and so they started to explore the possibility of getting rid of all their real body parts and being able to live for a great deal longer. In fact, just go on living as mechanical things.
So in terms of the practicalities of the costume in 1967, what were some of the challenges?
Well, we had no money to start with. Yeah. I'm sure you've heard that one before. And it was a tryout, you know, we'd just test the water and see whether, so you haven't got very much money. And of course, it's a well-known fact that I wasn't the slightest bit interested in science fiction at that stage. But you see, you have to turn up at a meeting with a drawing. And after the chats that I'd had with Kit and with the producer, Innes Lloyd, I had to sit down and think, well, there's a meeting at 2:00 tomorrow, I better come up with a drawing. So I did, and hated every minute of it. And then, you know, when I brought the drawing and said, well, this is what the idea I'm thinking, and they said, oh, yes, that's lovely, go right ahead. So then I had to find the fabrics and things to do it that would fit into the budget. And it wasn't easy, but I learned a lot on the way, and the poor guys who had to wear the costumes lost a lot of weight because I'd put a plastic sort of layer on the outside, so it turned into a very good slimming suit.
Right, a bit of a sweat box, basically.
Yes, indeed. However, we with bits of sticky tape and safety pins, we got the first lot of filming done, you know, and the poor guys were just wonderful. The actors were fantastic and said, don't worry about it, darling, it's okay. So we got there, and then they just happened to click, and the next time when Mark II came up, I had a bit more money, and they were a little bit more sophisticated.
Yeah, and that's the thing with the Cybermen, is that, like, with the Daleks, apart from maybe the colours and maybe the mechanics to make them look slicker, the Cybermen have really grown through the ages.
Oh,
it's,
yes.
It's actually been a way to show that as a menacing being, that they're evolving and improving and getting even scarier, I guess.
Mm, yes, well, they're really working hard at it. And of course, the only thing that the Daleks have been able to do is to get upstairs.
I mean,
you know. So they really don't have much style. I mean, and as you say, they're now coming in bright colour, sorted colours. Pick your colour, you know.
Yes, that's right.
So there you go. It's a bit like buying a car.
That's Alexandra Tynan, the designer and helper creator of the original Cybermen on Doctor Who.
You're on Joy 94.9, and you've been listening to A Little Pot of Joy with Andrea and Alice. And it's been another amazing evening. And how's Jax and Greta?
Oh, they're so fantastic. They make me laugh so much, and they make you laugh a lot as well. I wish people could see.
I'm glad you can't see.
I thought you were going to hurt yourself, honestly, laughing so hard, but they're hilarious, so fair enough.
Sorry, I was struggling to breathe.
Yeah.
really have to go back and listen to the entire podcast.
That's right. And the same goes for Critical Hit. CNC Drive Factory are always fantastic. And of course, Q&N. We love our updates on the news. So yeah, go back and listen to the entire podcast for all of those and more. There's 100 podcasts coming out every week, it seems like, these days. So get on it.
Well, it's been really great listening to so much amazing content on the Joy website.
Isn't it? It's fantastic. There's something for everyone.
You can find more of the complete podcasts on the Joy website, joy.org.au, or download them for free from the iTunes store.
You've been listening to A Little Pot of Joy, the podcast program. See joy.org.au and click on our podcast link to subscribe to your favourite podcasts free.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.